This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Under this new rule by the Obama administration, each car maker will have an overall responsibility for the entire array of vehicles that they offer. So if they are selling a big gas guzzler, then they have to counter that with a super efficient, small passenger car.
We often hear about efforts to raise the fuel efficiency standards for our nation's fleet of automobiles. But what's being done to make our trucks and buses burn less gas? This week's guest on Sea Change Radio is doing something to help tackle this problem. John Bozell is the CEO of CalStart, a nonprofit organization that's trying to help develop and implement clean, more efficient transportation solutions by advocating for more progressive policies. Bozell and I discuss the barriers to change fuel efficiency standards over the past 30 years, the progress that's been made over the past 4 years, what hurdles lie ahead, and what lessons we can learn from similar efforts in other countries.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by John Bozell. He's the CEO of CalStart, a nonprofit working to accelerate the growth of the clean transportation technologies industry. John, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex. Happy to be here.
So first, tell us the mission of CalStart and what your day-to-day efforts entail.
Yeah, our mission is really clean air, reduced dependence on oil, and fewer greenhouse gas emissions, and great high-quality jobs, and we do that by focusing on growing the clean transportation technologies industry. We think there's an enormous opportunity here to really transform the way we move ourselves and to really completely move away from oil and toward a much more sustainable transportation future.
So before we get into some of the shortcomings of our policies, let's first talk about some of the improvements and where you see progress.
Yeah, we are just about to start the 20th year celebration of our organization. And over those 20 years, we have seen a tremendous amount of progress. And I think it's best summarized in a simple phrase of from prototype to production. When you look back in the early 90s, we had a lot of great prototypes running around. But none of these cars, trucks, or buses were actually in production. They weren't coming off the assembly line. And that's what we now see in the last couple of years. You see the Nissan Leaf, the Chevy Volt. You see hybrid and electric trucks, buses operating on hydrogen, natural gas, electricity. This is all now coming to the market. It's available. And the key for us is how do we get those vehicles to become the dominant players in the market and not just 1 or 2% of the market.
And talk about CAFE standards for a moment, if you will. Explain to our audience what they are and why they didn't change for 30 years.
Under President Obama, he used his executive authority to implement the first vehicle standards, vehicle efficiency standards that we've seen in over 30 years. And the reason he was able to do that was that the Supreme Court said that the EPA could actually regulate greenhouse gas emissions. So it was simply a vehicle efficiency standard, but now it's not only a vehicle efficiency standard, but it's also a greenhouse gas standard. And previously it had been left up to Congress to enact a new vehicle efficiency standard, sometimes known by the CAFE acronym, Corporate Average Fuel Economy. And so what's so exciting about what the president has done is he has set a bold new target that by 2025, all the new vehicles on average being sold will have a fuel economy of 54.5 miles per gallon. that equates also to a much lower greenhouse gas standard as well. So we think that that regulation will drive a tremendous amount of change, innovation, and investment, and that we'll see much cleaner, lower carbon, more efficient vehicles on the roads in 2025 as a direct result of that policy change enacted by the Obama administration.
CalSTART has offices not only in California, you're in Colorado and in Michigan. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the journey that an organization like yours has to take to try to work with the big three automakers in Detroit, and what kind of pushback the Obama administration and organizations like yourselves get from the automakers? Or do you think these standards were a welcome change for a struggling industry?
So we our name suggests that we might just be focused on California, but in fact, we are operating nationally. We have offices now outside of California in Colorado and Michigan, hope to be opening a new one in New York soon as well. And we do definitely see this now as a very strong national movement toward cleaner transportation. California has been a leading state in this area. It is the only state in the nation that is allowed to set its own standards if they are stronger than the federal standard. Then all other states have the option of following the California standard for tailpipe emissions or following the weaker federal standard. So we do think that it's incredibly important for California to be a success and to show that these tough policies can work. And then if that does occur, then we expect other states to follow suit.
And this is not new, by the way. I remember when I first came out here to visit in the late 80s, I had some kind of registration problem because my car was not built to conform to California emission standards. And this is 1988, 1989 or something. And so California has always kind of been an outlier from the rest of the industry, but it's such a big market that it can actually lead to innovative change.
That's exactly right. We have in the state just such extreme air pollution problems that the congressional delegation worked hard to secure approval for California to be able to set a tougher standard than the federal one. One of the reasons why this new greenhouse gas standard for light-duty vehicles was approved by the Obama administration and was not strongly opposed by the auto industry is that California said, we will, if we can agree on a tough standard, we will make our standard the same as the federal one. And this was a big change and a big development for the car companies because it was tough for them to build cars for California and the other states that followed the California regulation and then another car with a different emission technology for all the other states. So they were very pleased that now there is one standard. But I think as a result of it being one standard, California regulators got something in that deal, which was a higher federal standard than it would have been without California agreeing to the one standard. So this is really a historic development in terms of policy that I don't think the president really gets enough credit for, is enacting these very tough standards and doing it without tremendous opposition from the auto industry and actually getting this regulation, putting it into effect. And we're just now starting to see some of these vehicles come to the market as a result.
And I misspoke earlier when I said I couldn't register my car in California. I just meant that I was penalized something. I think I had to pay $300, but it was an important incentive, I guess. What kind of financial incentives do you think need to be implemented to go further to get a clean transportation fleet or disincentive?
Yeah, that's a really great question because it is easier to get incentives put in place than it is to get disincentives in place. We have right now at the federal level a very important $7,500 tax credit if you buy an electric vehicle or a near zero emission vehicle like a Chevy Volt. That's basically a plug-in hybrid. Same for the plug-in Prius that you can now get that operates for a limited amount of time on electricity only before switching into hybrid mode. So that federal incentive is very helpful. for everybody who you know pays taxes and has can take advantage of that tax credit. Some states like California have an additional state incentive, and I think all these incentives are critically important because what we don't really yet have is the full cost of our oil dependence being recognized at the price we pay at the pump. We have a market price at the pump, but that market price doesn't factor in the cost of defending the Persian Gulf and the free flow of oil. It doesn't factor in the huge healthcare cost that all of us have to pay as a result of unhealthy air due to emissions from oil, gasoline, and diesel-powered cars. So the incentives are really important to help encourage market adoption. And what we see right now, unfortunately, we have those incentives for passenger cars, but we have no incentives for trucks or buses.
What is your organization doing to change that?
Yeah, so we are encouraging at the congressional level, federal level, incentives for trucks, you know, for everything from a UPS delivery truck to a big rig, you know, Class 8 truck. We would like to see a proportionate level of incentives for those types of vehicles. And right now it's zero. You could, you know, a fleet like UPS or Frito-Lay could deploy an electric truck. It could save or displace maybe 50 gallons of diesel on a daily basis, and they get zero incentives from the federal government, whereas somebody buys a Nissan Leaf, they would get $7,500. So we think that's an inequity, a disparity in federal policy that needs to be addressed. Fortunately, some states like California and soon to be New York and Maryland and Oregon do have state-level incentives for cleaner trucks, which do help move the market forward.
And for every FedEx or UPS that has the market capitalization to go in and make that kind of investment to a greener fleet and then save money, the free market economists out there would say, well, you know, a UPS doesn't need incentives because they're going to be saving X amount of dollars by having a greener fleet. But mid-sized businesses and others that don't have the deeper pockets could really benefit from having these similar incentives that they have for plug-in vehicles, especially when you consider these executives who are trying to save their job on a year-to-year basis. To put in a 10-year plan to green a fleet, that takes a lot of job security.
That's a really good point. And what the incentives do is they help lower that upfront cost. The life cycle costs or the operating costs are lower. So if, you know, your per mile cost of driving on electricity is lower than it is if you're driving on diesel. So over time, you can make that money back. But these incentives right now are helpful, very helpful for even the big fleets to make the transition to make the decision to buy that cleaner truck. And it's definitely helpful for the mom and pop operation that is considering a choice like that.
Look down that lonesome road before you travel on. Look up and greet your
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to John Bozell. He's the CEO of CalStart, which is a nonprofit that works to accelerate the growth of the clean transportation technologies industry. John, you talked about the Obama administration's bold initiatives to have higher fuel economy standards by 2025. When somebody hears 15 years from now, or that doesn't sound so bold, but why is that bold, and why why does it take so long to implement these type of changes?
First of all, I think it's exceptionally bold when you figure that nothing has been done the last 30 years on
why
to improve fuel economy. And that was really because that change did not occur because it required congressional action to improve the fuel economy standard. And the big three in particular often fought any changes to the fuel economy standard largely because they were selling the bigger, less fuel efficient vehicles, and it was going to be tougher for them to comply. And then, you know, what happened was a change when the Supreme Court said that the administration, the federal government, could actually regulate greenhouse gas emissions. Then the president could move forward with the EPA to enact this new standard and did not have to wait for congressional approval. So that was the big policy change, actually something very positive coming out of the Supreme Court. And I think also now what we see is, the auto industry, the car companies are racing against each other to have vehicles that are more efficient, more environmentally sustainable, because it's not only here in the U.S., but in Japan, China, and Europe, policymakers are demanding that vehicles become lower carbon and cleaner. I just want to address your question about why is, going to 54.5 miles per gallon by 2025, really bold. Because right now, today, as of 2016, we'll be getting to about 37.5. So you're talking about almost a 50% jump between 2016 and 2025. That's really a big number. And the auto industry is extremely capital intensive. It moves pretty slowly. It takes from the time that they develop and approve a design for a car to when it actually gets on the production line is about 6 years, about a 6 year time period. So we're actually talking about two, production cycles between now and 2025. And by that point, the car companies have to take their fleet today, the vehicles that they sell today, and jump it up by 50%. So it's actually, if you know the automotive industry, that's a big challenge. I think they're up for it. But it is a big challenge.
Can you give us a perspective, a global perspective, on Asian and European countries that have much higher standards and the arc and the evolution, how they got there? How many years did it take from somebody putting up the red flag in a country like Japan or Italy or wherever they have higher fuel economy standards to where they are today?
The Japanese and the Europeans had some higher standards. California was pretty similar to the standards in Japan and Europe. And then what you had about 3 or 4 years ago, where the Chinese determined that their standards ought to be pretty much in line with what Japan is doing. So it enacted a very tough set of vehicle standards. And now with this new policy by the Obama administration, we're pretty much now, the United States will be pretty much in line with what Japan, Europe, and China are doing. Maybe a little bit slower, maybe 2 or 3 years behind, but we're getting closer to being having similar standards and basically the world moving in that same general direction toward cleaner, lower carbon vehicles.
How long did it take for the Chinese government to raise their standards, and what exactly are their standards right now?
They are, right now the Chinese standards are with their passenger car market are heading more or less to that 54.5 mile per gallon equivalent. They may be shooting for more like a 2021 time frame.
Where were they 10 years ago?
They didn't really have standards.
Right. Yeah. So from 0 to 100 almost, they were able to achieve a much higher level at a much greater rate than the U.S. Even with this quote unquote bold initiative, it still pales in comparison. And my point is to a country like China, which we pillory for their reliance on coal and their fairly inefficient ways in terms of their energy grid.
Yeah. I mean, not having to really work through the messy process of democracy, China can move a lot faster. And it's just phenomenal if you look at their car industry. You know, 10 years ago, I believe that they were producing about, 2 million cars per year. Now, it's more cars sold than in North America, so they're up about 15, 16 million new cars being sold a year in China. Along with that, they looked at it and said, boy, we don't have a lot of oil, indigenous oil. Our dependence on oil is going to grow dramatically. And I think, there was certainly an environmental element to their decision-making, but I think it was also a very much a national security policy that they didn't really want to become hugely dependent on imported oil for their growth as a nation and to support their rapidly growing, automotive market.
How would the U.S. government be able to influence, or is there any kind of policy that could somehow curb the marketing of inefficient vehicles? Is there a way to incentivize or to penalize people who are driving tanks around? I mean, this is a luxury in a climate crisis that most people agree we can't afford to have those kind of luxuries. How do we penalize people who decide to buy a Hummer and drive around getting 5 miles a gallon? And the auto industry that is still showing an endless stream of powertrain trucks and the largest engine, and now they're starting to push the green element a little bit, but the reality is something quite different. Is there any way for that to be regulated, or you think this has to just be a market correction?
Yeah. Well, under this new rule by the Obama administration, each car maker will have an overall responsibility for the entire array of vehicles that they offer. So if they are selling a big gas guzzler, then they have to counter that with a super efficient, small passenger car. And the regulation is based on not only product offerings, but then sales. So they, in many ways, this regulation will at least drive those bigger vehicles to be more efficient. And we're already starting to see some of that, where you're seeing a downsizing of engines in some of the pickup trucks. They're using more fuel-efficient internal combustion engine technology. So you're starting to see some of that. Now, the French have gone a step further, and they've enacted something called a fee-bate, which is you place a fee on the larger, less efficient vehicles, and you give a rebate then to the smaller, more efficient vehicles. And that, I believe, is a policy that has helped drive the market even faster toward more efficient vehicles. There's been a lot of discussion about a similar policy here in California, less so in the United States. But in California, it has always been opposed by the automotive industry, which does not like the idea of any of their vehicles being labeled as negative or bad in any way. And so they don't like that fee part. They would gladly accept the rebate part, but they don't like the fee part.
Well, I stopped at a roadhouse in Texas. Well, a little place called Hamburger Dan's. I heard that old jukebox start playing a tune called Truck Driving Man. The waitress then brought me some coffee. Just fit me, 'cause I'm a truck driving man. Pour me another cup of coffee, for it is the best in the land. I put a nickel in the jukebox and play the truck driving man.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking with the CEO of CalStart, John Bozell. One of the things that would make it even more exciting for everyone in terms of, and more affordable, would be more innovation and effective policy making in the public transportation sector. Does your organization dip their toes into that world at all? And if not, give us an overview of where you think some of the more hopeful progress is being made in that area.
Yeah. I think there's a huge opportunity for transit buses as we know them today to become much different going forward, to be a zero emission, really clean, and then quiet, to also improve the quality of urban life. We also very much support increased funding for the transportation system in general.
High-speed rail.
High-speed rail and just sort of transportation in general right now, both at the federal level and in California, the gas tax has not been indexed for inflation. So we've had a growing demand, a need for better transportation, and even from, that includes maintaining of roads so we don't have potholes, to building a world-class, a better public transportation system. We have been, as a nation and in the state of California, have been underfunding that whole transportation system. And it's all, at the very least, what we need to be able to do is figure out how to index the gas tax for inflation. That simple step would be very helpful toward having a better transportation system.
Or maybe even a gas tax that is pegged to reality.
Exactly.
Or the rest of the world. We're all crying when it gets to $4, while the rest of the world the developed world is paying $8 or $9 a gallon.
Yeah. I mean, we're paying half. We say gas prices are high here, and we're paying half the price of what they do in Europe. And in Europe, you have a great, mass transit system.
A lot of the talk has been about fuel economy standards, but when somebody makes that leap into buying a plug-in vehicle, they're always worried about, I may have to drive more than 100 miles in a day if necessary. So what kind of efforts are being made by organizations like yours and around the country to improve the range of electric vehicles?
I think the two main barriers for the adoption of electric vehicles are cost and range, and I think the incentive issue policy does help to address the cost issue. Range is important. And I think as a result of the stimulus bill, there was a tremendous amount of investment made in recharging stations, primarily in homes and then in public places. And that's been very helpful. We are now leading a national program to help get employers to install chargers at the workplace. Because people typically will go to their work site, they'll park their car there, and it'll be there for 8 or 9 hours, a chance for an electric vehicle to be fully recharged. So we want employers to step up and become part of this movement toward a more sustainable transportation future, and to put in chargers at the work site so that we can help eliminate some of that range anxiety, allow people who live further away and would want to have an electric car but are concerned about the range to be able to charge at the work site and then be able to drive home, with zero emissions. There are a lot of leading employers right now who are taking some of this action. Google, SAP, Fox Movies, 20th Century Fox Movies, they're doing a lot. But we need this really to be a national movement from large employers to mid-size and small employers. To help become part of the electric vehicle zero emission movement.
Range anxiety. I think we need to get Big Pharma on the case there too. Maybe they can come up with a cure for range anxiety. The CEO of clean transport nonprofit CalStart, John Bozell. John, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Grateful Dead, Madeline Peru, and Glenn Campbell. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.